And you're listening to another edition of the Martinez Perspective. I'm Brandon Martinez. The website is alt-right.com. So I had a few things I wanted to say today. A number of interesting stories came out recently that I've been posting vigorously on the website, alt-right.com. The first thing I wanted to comment on was the article I wrote last week called Female Narcissism Unleashed by Social Media Has Led to the Rise of MGTOW. MGTOW is the Men Going Their Own Way movement, which has exploded in popularity over the past 10 years. I remember, when I first woke up, got red-pilled, I did not see any MGTOW content on YouTube or the internet. It just wasn't there. But since Facebook came around and Twitter and Instagram and Tinder and these dating apps, it is no surprise that MGTOW has absolutely exploded. It's everywhere. I mean, you could find their channels all over YouTube. They're all over all the major sites. They have pages on Facebook. They're on Twitter. It is a real force to be reckoned with, and I believe the correlation is directly with the rise of social media, the rise of dating apps, the rise of hookup culture, and all of the degenerate vices that plague our society today. It is so clear that is the cause of MGTOW. Now, I explained in the article that social media has led to an outbreak of female narcissism. So, women today are pampered, they're entitled, they are taught that they are special, that they're better. And this is the general feminist discourse that we hear throughout society, but it's just been totally amplified by social media. Your average woman, I wrote in the article, I said your average woman, has all these beauty filters on her phone, and she has all these complex makeup techniques to make herself, doll herself up. So your average woman can just highly exaggerate her looks to beauty queen status when it's not the case, right? She's wearing a mask. But she's been convinced of her beauty. It's been validated by these beta cucks on these dating sites, these apps, these social media sites, Instagram. All a woman has to do is upload one slutty photo to Instagram, to Facebook, and she will be bombarded with compliments, with offers for dates, all of that. She is inundated with validation, with men complimenting her, telling her she's beautiful. And that's all she was really looking for, as the studies I cited in this article show. The average female, when she does these things, she looks for her validation on the internet, on dating apps, and social media. She doesn't even bother going out with guys anymore. Why would she, when she can get all her little fucking ego boosts with on Instagram, Instathought, right? So these women have become not all, but most, to paraphrase Jesse Lee Peterson there, they have become just total head cases. Like, they have their heads up their own asses when it comes to this kind of thing. This is narcissism on steroids. They're on their phones all day long, taking selfies, uploading these selfies. Everyone tells them they're beautiful, when in fact they're not. They're wearing a mask. But this has led to women just having this kind of really overbearing entitlement and overblown self-worth attitude. attitude where they think they're so beautiful, they're a princess, and the only thing that they'll ever settle for is some, high status movie star, athlete, businessman. You know, this attitude has destroyed dating. You know, these dating apps have killed dating for men, because there's an abundance of options for females in the modern age when it comes to men. You know, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 200 years ago, before the internet, before these iPhones came out, women didn't have that many options. They had their local community. They would meet men through social circle. And through social circle, there's obviously not that many options, right? You know, even today through social circle, there's not that many options. If you have like a small or medium social circle, like how many single women are in your social circle if you're a man? Most of your friends are going to be men. You're not going to have that many female friends. And of the female acquaintances that you have, how many are going to be single? How many are you even compatible with? Very few options in terms of a social circle, right? But this state of affairs forced women to not be bitches, to not be narcissists, to not be head cases, to work through their problems, right? Not to just pick up and run the second there was an argument or a disagreement and all this shit. But today they're encouraged to do the opposite. They're encouraged to just be totally fickle, self-centered, and just drop a relationship at the drop of a hat based on, you know, the slightest perceivable flaw in their partner. And they're encouraged to do this by these dating apps. This is a woman who logs into a dating app and puts one slutty photo on there, she will be bombarded with 50 or more messages every hour. The simping on these apps is incredible. And I also blame the men for being such fucking simps, being such weak little cowards, pathetic degenerates, thirsty degenerates who are just begging for it. They are giving these women the validation that they are using to behave badly, right? So she logs into a dating app and, you know, has 50 offers for guys. She has the pick of the litter. Like, she has no incentive to behave properly in a relationship, right? She can be a spoiled brat, and if the man is not giving her showering her with gifts, then she can pick up and find some other guy in virtually the click of a button, right? So the two studies I quoted here, the first one says, many women are using dating apps to confirm their attractiveness rather than find a partner, study reveals. Researchers analyzed the swiping habits of 641 students aged 19 to 29. Girls get a kick out of being perceived as a potential partner by other users. Women prefer to use the apps for an ego boost to feel more attractive. New research into the apps found that men were swiping with an eye for casual sex. So dudes are on there, they're trying to get laid, and all they're getting is a bunch of egotistical skanks accepting their compliments and giving nothing in return, which is why dating apps are a complete waste of time and you should delete them immediately, right? The second study said 1/3 of women admit to going on a date for a free meal. 1/3 of women have admitted to going on a date simply to get that free meal from a man. And then the media picked up on this story and they labeled this foodie calls. And they were excusing this. There was a video I linked to in this article where they were talking about this. And they admitted that, like, the women who do this have negative personality traits. But those are astronomical numbers. 1 in 3. So 1 in 3 women that you're dating is probably just going out with you to get free shit from you, the free gibs, right? You're just a stupid little cock who's feeding her free meals at fancy restaurants, and she's just using your ass for the free meal. And what do you get? What do you get out of this situation? Absolutely nothing. She won't even put out for you. She probably won't even get in your bed, or she'll take a very long time to do so. And you're wasting your time, energy, and money on a harlot, you know, a total parasite. So, like, you sacrifice, if you're a red-pilled man, of course, this is the worst possible thing. Like, you go out, you entertain some woman that is a completely, unread, uncultured airhead, just a vacuous mannequin, and you've wasted hours of your time courting this woman, you're chasing her, you're sending her messages, you're asking her out, you're paying for the meals, you're paying for the outings, and what do you get in return? Absolutely fucking nothing, right? And even if you do get laid, is it really fucking worth all that effort? Like, you could just go and hire and pick up a fucking prostitute and get what you want, which is just to get laid, without all of the fucking hassle, right? Just cut straight to the chase. Forget all the fucking hassle, the mind games, the chase game that you're forced to play with these dumb broads, and get it done, you know, cheaply and effectively, straight to the fucking source. So what I concluded from all of this is that women, essentially, because feminism has pushed women into the workforce, so now it's like an obligation for women to work, to have careers, to get educated, and so forth. So this has created a scenario where the hypergamous instincts of the female, which always existed, has simply enhanced. They haven't disappeared. You'd think maybe they would disappear now that they work, now that they don't need men for money or to take care of them. But it's not the case. Hypergamy, female hypergamy, has simply increased. It has become more aggressive. So instead of, like, settling for a guy that, you know, a well-to-do guy who perhaps is not a millionaire, but, you know, has a, you know, decent income, you know, hardworking guy, you know, he's a lumberjack, whatever, you know, that guy would do pretty well 50, 100, 150 years ago, right? He would have no problem finding a woman. But today, things have completely changed. Things are so completely lopsided now and rigged against the man. And why is that? Because the women, now that they work, now that they can earn a living for themselves, they're not reliant or dependent on men to get the resources for them because of this highly industrialized society. Now the female has upped the ante for hypergamy. She simply looks for a higher status man than herself. And we know this to be true. She only gives time and attention and puts any effort in a man who she believes has high potential to elevate her lifestyle, to bring her up from where she is. So she's middle class, she wants to move into the upper class. She's very low class, she wants to move in the middle class. So they have upped the ante for men. So now the baseline standard for a female when it comes to them searching for men is, what can this man provide me that I can't get for myself, right? If she's making $50,000 a year, she's a lawyer, she's making $50,000 to $100,000 a year, she can take care of herself. Now her standard for dating is, I need a man who makes $500,000 a year, who has a yacht, you know, who goes on trips to Paris every year, who has a lake house. This is how it works with all of these women. Like, you can always find exceptions, right? You can always find exceptions of women who don't necessarily put everything into the resources, but, like, 9 times out of 10, that's what it's all about when it comes to these long-term relationships that they get in. They only get in long-term relationships when there is a very high, social and financial benefit to do so, right? So this is the standard for most modern Western women, these feminist women, these liberal feminist women. It's all about the cash. It's all about what you can do for her that she cannot do for herself. If you take her to a mediocre restaurant, she'll be like, oh, screw this guy, right? Screw this guy. He's not lavishing me with expensive dinners and gifts. screw him, I'm worth more than that. So this is the mentality of these princesses, right? The mentality is that she is some kind of like prize, some super special diamond in the rough, right? She's like this highly valuable prize that the man must work and work and work and work for to get, right? He's buying her. She's just like a 10, 15 carat diamond that you're buying. That's all there is. These women, this is how they think. Like, they view themselves as material possessions. They view themselves as this, right? So it's so contradictory that, like, these feminists come around saying women are more than just a vagina and tits. They're more than just a sexuality. They're more than this. No, they do this themselves. They sexualize, over-sexualize, and hyper-sexualize themselves to make themselves appealing to high-status hotshots, right? This is how they view themselves, as just an asset for a high-status man to use to get his dick wet. And that's all she is. Like, they understand that that's all that they are, and we know that's what they are, but they don't want us to say it, right? You're a bigot, you're a misogynist. If you say a woman is just her only value is her sex appeal, her only value is her vagina, at least to a man, you're a bigot, right? But then they behave in stereotypical ways which prove this to be true, right? So this is the reason for the expansion of MGTOW. It's the narcissistic, entitled behavior of females. Their dating behavior is horrendous. Like, you know, I've tried to date these women in their 20s, and they suck. They're horrible. Like, you try to organize a date, they cancel at the last minute, they reschedule. It's always what's convenient for them. Always when it's convenient for them, never with you. The only women that will actually, like, put in any effort to see you are older women, women in past their 30s that aren't as attractive and so forth. So, like, if you really lower your standards to, like, a chick that maybe she's chubby or maybe she doesn't have the best face and so forth, then those women will actually might put in some effort to see you and won't act like total cunts. But the higher she is on the attractiveness scale, the more bitchy she's going to be, the more entitled she's going to be. And obviously, as men, we're looking for that attractive female. That's what we're biologically inclined to pursue. So, you know, it's very difficult for you to just drop your standards to something that's very mediocre and that you're not really sexually aroused by, right? So it's kind of a catch-22. Like, the only chicks that behave decently in these kind of situations are girls that aren't as attractive. But, you know, can you really stick with that long-term? Very difficult, right? So my kind of baseline position is that attractive females are all bitches. Attractive females are all narcissists and cunts. So that's just how it works. That's how they are. They can get away with that. You know, they've been heaped with phony praise their whole lives and told that they're beautiful. And they got all this. They're swimming in validation their whole lives. They have massive egos. Massive egos, right? And even your average looking chick, you know, has this attitude because of the online validation. She's putting beauty filters on her phone, she's got hair extensions and all this fake up on her face. So, you know, she's convinced these suckers, these simps to douse her in compliments, and so she acts accordingly, like a princess, right? So dating is horrendous. If you're going after chicks that are like 6 out of 10 and up, and if you're in good shape, I don't see why you shouldn't be, right? Like, if you make an effort to look good, you go to the gym and everything, why should you lower your standards to, like, some fatty, right? So if you're going for them 6 out of 10 and up, like, you're going to have a horrendous time dating these chicks. Like, especially if you're not in their social circle, if you're just a new guy she doesn't know, you will get stood up. You will get, you know, the runaround, like... It's almost entirely a waste of time. Like, I've pretty much just given up on that kind of bullshit, chasing these bitches around. I put virtually no effort into that. There's no point. And if you're trying to get your dick wet, I might as well just go hire a hooker. Like, why waste your time chasing around some bitch that will not even put out and will just probably rob you of a free meal when you can just go and pay some prostitute to get the deed done and over, right? That's what it is. It's like there's no difference between the two things. Like the only difference is you're spending too much time on one th on the thing that doesn't reward you, and that is stupid, right? They're both prostitutes, but the one actually does what you want them to do, no questions asked, and the other one is just screwing around with you. You know, she's a prostitute, meaning you are buying her, you're trying to impress her and do all these stupid fucking gimmicks to impress her. You know, and that's another thing with this dating. It's just you, the man, are doing, you're like a circus clown. You have to be funny and you have to do all these things. You have to make her laugh and you have to be impressive. You have to dazzle her. There's all these expectations put on the man. Zero expectations put on the woman. I've never gone out on a date with a woman who made me laugh. Never. They're completely unfunny. Like, I've never laughed at something that one of these women said. You know, they're so boring. They're so lame. They're just like, all they talk about is their stupid career path and bullshit. And then as soon as you get onto any topic that's interesting, like, I don't want to talk about that. That's just boring. Like politics and current events and forget that. I want to talk about like celebrities and shit. Like, this is how they are. It is a minefield out there. I mean, the only solution that I can see to this problem is maybe Eastern European women, right? Like, I've heard, you know, the memes that Eastern European women are more traditional, all this stuff. There's probably some truth to it. I don't think they're as corrupted by feminism and that kind of bullshit. But, you know, that's also an arduous task because you have to go travel around there. You have to, you know, who has the money in these economies these days to just fly around Eastern Europe chasing pussy, right? Like, it's one, it'll cost you an arm and a leg doing that, and there's no guarantee of any success, right? And secondly, there's the logistics problem of you not living in that country, having to bring her to your country, and how do you convince her to do that? You know, it's a very expensive and fruitless endeavor very often. So that is why MGTOW is booming. Business is booming for the MGTOW movement. Now, I don't say that MGTOW is the solution. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that, like, obviously, if every man became MGTOW and every woman was a feminist, most women are, but say every woman went the path of feminism, every man went the path of MGTOW, obviously this would be disastrous for our civilization. There'd be no children. We would die off. So I'm not saying long term that MGTOW is the solution, but it simply exists and it will continue to grow if things don't change on the part of these females, right? If these females continue to have this feminist attitude and this entitled attitude, no men are going to put up with this shit. It's just that simple. Most decent, you know, men with higher self-esteem will not allow some dumb bitch to walk all over them, right? So things really, really need to change. That's why I say feminism is the greatest threat. It is the greatest threat to white nationalism, is the greatest threat to the West. If feminism succeeds, or it guarantees the destruction of the West. It guarantees the destruction of the white race because, you know, the women have been totally turned against motherhood and family and are just pursuing these like vapid, useless careers that do nothing for us, right? They're just working for Jewish corporations spewing out garbage products and consumerism. This is the reality of the modern femoid, right? and many men, is that they're just working for this Jewish system towards the destruction of our civilization. So, you know, the only real solution to it is to find the small sliver of people within our societies that, you know, are still committed to a traditional lifestyle, and congregate ourselves in some small community, right? You know, try to find like-minded people and move to the same spot. Because if we're all just scattered across the globe, I mean, we can't impact anything that way, right? Moving on from the Mingtao discussion, a few articles here that I put out recently. The Jewish bank Goldman Sachs has declared that it wants to reduce the number of white males on their boards, their corporate boards. It said, article was in Bloomberg. It said, the era of white all-male board is coming to an end. Goldman Sachs Group Inc. Chief Executive David Solomon, a Jew, issued the latest ultimatum Thursday from Davos. Wall Street's biggest underwriter of initial public offerings in the U.S. will no longer take a company public in the U.S. and Europe if it lacks a director who is either female or diverse. What the hell is that supposed to mean? Well, diverse is now the definition of a person who is diverse. Does that mean the person is mixed race or has like four different ethnicities mixed in, or is a fucking transgender alien? Like, what the fuck does that even mean? It obviously just means a fucking black person, a brown person, a non-white. That's all it means. That's all diversity means, is non-white. It says, it quotes Solomon saying, starting on July 1st in the U.S. and Europe, we're not going to take a company public unless there's at least one diverse board candidate with a focus on women. So Solomon told CNBC he didn't mention Asia, which continues to lag behind other regions when it comes to board diversity. So Asia gets off the list. Asia gets a free pass because all the board members of these Goldman Sachs subsidiaries in Asia are Chinese or Japanese or Koreans, and their countries are not diverse. Their countries are racially homogenous, so he cannot demand that they conform to this new diversity regime. He says next year the bank will raise the threshold to two diverse directors, which includes diversity based on sexual orientation and gender identity. And the guy who said that was Goldman. Interesting, you know, of course this is utterly absurd, and you know, we don't want any more white males on our boards. We want a bunch of transsexual fucking freaks, and preferably of the Negroid race. And you know, good luck to them, right? Like, go fill up your CEO boards with a bunch of black transsexuals and let's see how well your companies do, you fucking lunatics, right? But obviously the elephant in the room here is that Goldman Sachs is a Jewish banking firm, and the majority of the top executives are Jews. The two top guys, Lloyd Blakefein and David Solomon, and this guy Goldman, these are all Jews, right? So where is the diversity? Where is the diversity? They're not calling for Jewish men to be put on the chopping block, only white men. But these Jews will pass as white, so I guess they will have to limit the number of Jewish men on the boards also, right? But this is the grand hypocrisy of these Jews. It's like they can come out and say this place is too white, and you've seen these assholes do this with like Hollywood, even though Hollywood is dominated by Jews, but like there's also a lot of whites. They said Hollywood is too white, but they never say that it's too Jewish. They never say anything is too Jewish. Goldman Sachs is too Jewish. Hollywood is too Jewish. There's a distinct lack of diversity, folks. Why is it that Jews can be dominant in an institution despite being less than 3% of the population, yet nobody demands that they reduce their numbers? Never, never, because they're the chosen people, ladies and gentlemen. The chosen people can rule and dominate and be supreme because they're the chosen master race. We must all submit and be slaves to them. And that's how it works. Diversity for thee, but not for me, says the Jew. Says the Jew, right? Same in Israel. Israel is a racial ethnocracy. It's an ethnocracy. It's a democracy, but it's a democracy for Jews and Jews only. All of their political parties are Jewish supremacists who guarantee, who have it as the baseline platform, that Israel must sustain itself as a Jewish state with a Jewish majority. They're the ultimate racialists in their nation. But then when it comes to America, when it comes to Europe, when it comes to Canada and the white nations, they demand that the Dindus come in and take over, right? Less white people. And you can see the ultimate logic behind it is less white people means less competition for Jews, right? Because Jews and whites have high IQs. Whites have comparable high IQs to Jews, and Jews want to eliminate a high IQ competitor group and just be competing with a bunch of low IQ Dindus with like a 70 IQ from sub-Saharan Africa. Fantastic situation for the Jewish race, right? Very clever, these dirtbags. The last thing I wanted to comment on here was this article that came out from BBC and Guardian, put out the identity of the leader of the base. The base is one of these kind of like clandestine, supposedly white nationalist groups that is preparing for race war and all of that. There's been some news stories and hype about them recently. Apparently, a number of their people have been arrested and charged with various things. But nobody knew who was running it. This guy called, under the alias of Roman Wolf and Norman Spear, was supposedly the leader of this group. And he was recruiting people, getting them to do paramilitary training in very secluded areas. And it finally came out that this guy, he's an American who used to run an intelligence, kind of like a private intelligence company, has a background with the military and intelligence, claims he was formerly CIA. But the most interesting aspect here, it says here in the BBC, the American founder of U.S.-based militant neo-Nazi group The Base is directing the organization from Russia. Ronaldo Nazaro, 46, who uses the alias Norman Spear and Roman Wolf, left New York for St. Petersburg less than 2 years ago. It says multiple images and video of Navarro taken over several years in both the USA and Russia show the man known to be the base founder, who goes by two aliases. He has previously used photographs of himself when promoting the group online. Last year, Nazara was listed as a guest at a Russian government security exhibition in Moscow, which focused on the demonstration of the results of state policy and achievements. A video posted online in March 2019 shows Nazara in Russia wearing a t-shirt bearing an image of Vladimir Putin along with the words "Russia, absolute power." It says, we traced Nazaro and his Russian wife to an upmarket property in central St. Petersburg purchased in her name in July 2018, the same month to which the FBI dates the creation of the base. Records show that before moving to Russia, Nazaro ran a company registered in New York that offered access to a network of security professionals with expertise in intelligence, counterterrorism, counterinsurgency, psychological operations, and so on. It mentioned that he was served in Iraq and Afghanistan. It says Nazaro married a Russian woman in Manhattan in 2012. She had moved to the city from her homeland around 4 years earlier and spent time working in a bank. In 2018, when he first began promoting the base online using the Norman Spear pseudonym, they moved with their children to Russia. The article in The Guardian mentioned that Norman Spear has told base members that he remains in Russia. Law enforcement sources indicated on background that Nazarro is believed by some agencies to be working for the Russian government. Shows a picture of him with a t-shirt of Vladimir Putin. So this guy sets up this shady organization. He's in Russia. He's married to a Russian. This is the classic, you know, Russian honeypot, right? The classic Russian compromise operation. You know, this fits almost like perfectly. It's almost too good to be true. It fits perfectly with the Duganist strategy, right? Dugin wrote in Foundations of Geopolitics, he said, Russia should use its special services within the borders of the U.S. to fuel instability and separatism. For instance, provoke Afro-American racists. Russia should introduce geopolitical disorder into American activity, encouraging all kinds of separatism and ethnic, social, and racial conflicts, actively supporting all dissident movements, extremist, racist, and sectarian groups, thus destabilizing internal political processes in the U.S. It would also make sense simultaneously to support isolationist tendencies in American politics. Fits perfectly into that. They're backing both Black Lives Matter and these kind of groups to try to incite kind of civil war strife. You know, this is the Duganist model. You know, this guy gets hooked in with a Russian wife. I mean, it's the same thing with Richard Spencer, right? The Russian wife, like the Russian seductress wife, you know, hooks in a guy and then gets him to do some crazy operation to help Mother Russia, right? So it's just shit from out of a fucking movie right here. It says many people in the group indicated that he faced persistent suspicions. The spear guy, he faced persistent suspicions from current and former members of the group that he's a Fed or agent of a foreign government and that the base is a honeypot intended to lure neo-Nazis out in the open for the benefit of law enforcement, and that one of the guys that was arrested believed that he was a Russian agent. And, you know, it makes sense. The Russians just found this guy maybe the female has some KGB connections, who knows. Brought him to Russia and tasked him with doing this, starting up some clandestine cell to cause some chaos, right? It's not far-fetched at all. Fits right in with the general direction of Russian foreign policy. You know, we kind of have to look at it as, you know, the KGB used to do this also with the Negroes. They would give orders to the Communist Party USA to stir up these Negroes to get them to try to push for a separate black state and so forth. So you can see how they might benefit from white separatists. But our position should be like Russia would geopolitically benefit from internal strife, internal fissures in the U.S. and division. But our response to that can't really be like a liberal response to say things like, oh, well, let's just come together, everybody, and let's sing Kumbaya in America, and let's just be united under the flag, and no matter your race, no matter your culture, religion. That's sort of the liberal response to something like that. But what we should say is like, yeah, don't let yourself be used by the Russians and paid by the Russians to do these things. But we should obviously spearhead our own path, right? Like, I think white separatism is valid, like within the United States. It's a valid movement. I think it's a valid movement within the Russian state. Like the white nationalists in Russia should themselves be seeking to secede, to separate from the Russian state. You know, the current framework, the current configuration of the Russian Federation is just a patchwork of regions and over 100 different ethnic groups. I mean, it is a multicultural state in the truest sense, and Putin has openly stated that makes Russia strong. That diversity is the strength of Russia. I mean, he's made these same statements You hear virtually no criticism of this from these phonies in the alt-right that push the pro-Putin nonsense. And of course, they're completely quiet about this connection here because they have to dismiss anything that makes Russia look nefarious. So they're blaming it all on the CIA and the feds and ignoring this Russia connection or denying it. But, you know, it's valid in any white state. I think in Russia, in America, in Canada, the whites should be moving towards separatism, towards ethnic colonies, ethnic villages, ethno-villages on a smaller scale, building up kind of the infrastructure of what could possibly be a state somewhere down the road. You know, it's all of it seems far-fetched at this point, but like, you know, we have to do something. We have to make small steps to build, stepping stones to build up to something better. But this kind of Russian scheming is just a stupid distraction, right? Because it's like, you know, the Americans could do the same thing and start funding separatists in Russia, and there are plenty of them. And, you know, the Russians are funding separatists in America, including some white separatists like this guy. But, you know, it's all done just as kind of like this proxy battle, this proxy geopolitical battle. It's just fucking stupid and useless, right? Like, why bother with this stupid geopolitical scheming? Like, Putin's aim of all of this is not actually to help white nationalists, as they also support the Black Lives Matter side. It's just to cause chaos. Like, he just wants to destabilize like Dugin said, the internal processes of the U.S. They want to destabilize it. That's the only goal of this snake Putin, right? Putin is just some stupid, you know, run-of-the-mill KGB ideologue. Like, he believes just in Russian power and geopolitics and economic zones of influence. That's all he cares about. He doesn't give a fuck about race. He's openly condemned white nationalism and embraced multiculturalism. He wants a Eurasian empire. That's totally contrary to white nationalist ideals. So anyone saying that Putin is like on our side is stupid, right? Is feeding you a fantasy. He's on the side of Eurasian multiculturalism. The Western leaders are on the side of degenerate race mixing and multiculturalism also. Like, it's just a bad alternative. Like, there's no benefit there. Like, and that's why all these white nationals in Russia are in prison, because they call for effectively a white ethno state in Russia, and that's not what Putin wants. You know, a lot of them have actually gone and fought with the Azov battalion in Ukraine. Some of them just threw off any dreams of Slavic nationalism, white nationalism, and joined that stupid Novorossiya thing. And others joined the Ukrainian side because they saw the Ukrainian side was more actually white nationalist and ethnic based, whereas the Russian side is just this like stupid civic nationalism and national identity that is meaningless, just as meaningless as these, you know, American nationalists who think that any race can be American, any culture, any race, any religion can be equally American. It's the same in Russia, right? Any race, any culture, any religion can be Russian. It's just a title, a placeholder for multitudes of different people. But that's not what we're about. We're racialists. We believe in race. We believe that races are different or distinct. So the correct policy there is to pursue white separatism, but, you know, let's give up this stupid, you know, geopolitical tit for tat nonsense, which is what these Duginist freaks are promoting, right? It's just promote anything that could destabilize the system for their own weird, like, geopolitical ambitions to erect this Oriental Islamo alliance of Muslim countries and China and Russia's in there, It's like they just want to align themselves with these Dindus, like these Eurasian Dindus, and have them overwhelm and destroy the Western power bloc, right? That's what it's all about. Like they can go about trying to fucking do that. We need to forge our own path, which is white separatism. I think at this point, like, fighting for general nationalism, like the Nick Fuentes style of, like, you know, let's make America great again as a nation. I think the time for that has passed. The ship has sailed on that. There's too many non-whites in the country for the nation as a whole to be won back entirely for whites. So we have to think smaller scale. Like, none of us have any political power to affect change. So how do we go about doing this? Like, we have to come up with practical solutions to this. And just engaging in this kind of, you know, modern system of voting and just hoping that this kind of populist guy is going to reduce immigration for us. Like, that none of that even matters. Like, even if the immigration is reduced, the non-whites have far higher birth rates than whites. White women are just infected with feminism and are not going to get back in the kitchen, and they're not going to get back to having children. So there has to be a radical revolution, like a radical change of the culture. And that can only be achieved through, like, the total seizure of the state, right? Like Hitler did in Germany. Like, he achieved his revolution through total state power. Like, he had to dissolve all the other political parties, you know, throw out democracy, take control of all the media to shift Germany back on course, away from the harlotry and the sick degeneracy of the Weimar years, which was ubiquitous at that time. So unless people think that that's possible, that, like, an explicitly white nationalist movement can take power in the United States, is highly, highly unlikely, right? Like, the machinery in place that's controlled by Jews who are vehemently opposed to and are vigorously working against white nationalism, there's all these inbuilt firewalls to prevent that from happening. So, like, at this point, we have to look smaller scale than that. Like, that is far-fetched. Voting for another civic nationalist, it's the same across Europe. Like, these civic nationalists, they come in, they speak kind of mildly against radical feminism, they speak mildly against illegal immigration. They're taking these halfway stances, these half-assed kind of critiques and stances against this insane society that we're living in. But their solutions do not work. Like, their solutions are ineffective, because what are they saying? Like, stop illegal immigration. Well, that's not the main problem. It's legal immigration that's the problem. And then they say, oh, we need to have we need to encourage birth rates to incentivize women having more children. And, you know, that policy is applied also to the non-whites that are in the country, right? So it's like, if you don't explicitly make a natalist policy a racial policy, like, if you don't come out and say, we want whites to have these children and we're going to incentivize whites having them, then we're not going to win this demographics war, because these non-whites have more children anyway, right? And they can collect these new benefits that the whites can also collect. And on top of that, there's already the culture of promoting race mixing. So there's no guarantee that whites will always reproduce with other whites, you know? So these are all half measures. None of these are sufficient. Like, we are on a downward spiral towards the abyss when it comes to birth rates. Like, we're below replacement level birth rates. High immigration, out of control immigration, refugees, illegal immigration is out of control also. Like, radical measures need to be taken to solve all of those things simultaneously. And the CivNats and the populace come in and they offer us a very weak, watered down half measure and expect us to be satisfied with that, right? We shouldn't be satisfied with that. That will not save us. it will not save us. Offering incentives to everyone in the society to have more children will not help whites, right? If you're giving money to black people and brown people and Muslims to have those children also, then you haven't really done anything. Nothing has changed, right? These populists are controlled opposition. They are kind of like, you know, the last line of defense of the Jews to prevent a real revolution, to prevent a real change of course. And of course, all you look at all these populist parties, like, they say some decent things, but it's like, yeah, everything they propose is insufficient. They're pro-Jew, they're pro-Jewish, right? All of them, they're just, they love Jews. They're like sniffing the ass crack of Jews. Like, Vox in Spain is the same way. Salvini in Italy, the exact same. You have, you know, these other parties in Europe. Sweden Democrats. It's just like pathetic pandering to the Jewish race mixed in with like half measures for immigration, half measures for feminism, half measures against the crazy leftists. Like, this is the Jewish controlled opposition response to the insane radical left, right? And we shouldn't settle for that. Like, these kind of lazy people be like, well, it's the best we got at this point. It's like, no, we need to do things ourselves. We can't just we can't leave the fate of our race and civilization in the hands of people, of other people who we cannot trust, who likely are taking money from the enemy. We have to take the bull by the horns. We have to make a movement ourselves. The people who are fully red-pilled have to start doing more, you know, including myself, right? Like, I can only do so much. It's like, people like me, we're taking great risks just saying what we're saying on the internet. I mean, we're living, like, most Western countries have hate speech laws, right? And we're liable, people like me are liable at any time to be arrested, to be charged with hate speech. And most people are anonymous and afraid to use their real name and afraid to even speak, afraid to go on a podcast, right? Like, we are in such a weak position. We are in a feeble position. Most of our people on our side are scared of the hate speech laws. They're afraid. You know, they got us on the run. They got us on the run, cowering, weak, and afraid. And how could we ever possibly win the war with that kind of stature and posture? Can't be won like that. So people have to be brave. I mean, people have to take risks. Like, it is risky. Like, how do you, if you get slapped with a hate speech charge, you lose your job, you lose everything, right? Be on the streets, unless you have serious backup and support. So at the very least, people who don't want to take those risks have to help the people that do, have to back up the people that do, you know, whether that's financially or through some other means. You know, why is it that only a couple people have to take all the risks when it comes to this thing and fighting for our people, but then most of them, 99% of people, won't take any risks whatsoever? They just want to truck along in this degenerate system and get their paycheck and go home and then shitpost on the internet on 4chan anonymously, right? Like, that's not going to get us anywhere at the end of the day. So I think only kind of real world activism can move the needle on these things. You know, one of those things that could be successful is setting up some kind of ethno village, right? Finding some plot of land secluded and trying to build a community out of it, you know. And who knows where things could go? You know, 10, 20 years down the road, you know, you could have an ethnostate. I mean, how did the Jews get an ethnostate? I mean, they plotted and schemed for 50 years, for 100 years to get an ethnostate. They were having Zionist Congress meetings, right? I mean, they had a huge advantage on their side in that they had rich Jews, obscenely wealthy Jews like the Rothschilds funding their movement, right? You had the Schiffs and the Warburgs and the Rothschilds who were pouring money, millions of dollars, if not billions, into Jewish settlements in Palestine, right? Theodor Herzl was getting money from the Schiffs and the Warburgs and the Rothschilds, these Jewish Zionist ideologues. They have the money, they had the money, the prowess, the clout to be able to get this thing started. And they had to bribe a whole lot of people. They had to bribe Winston Churchill, Roosevelt, Truman. They had to bribe a whole lot of fucking powerful people in the West to help them get this project going. And even then, they faced struggles insofar as like Britain at one point stopped Jewish immigration to Palestine. They stopped the boats coming in, and the Jews, the radical Jews over there, started blowing up their own boats with Jews on them. They started attacking their own boats with Jews on them as like a form of protest against the British, who were preventing like the amount of Jews that was necessary to take over Palestine. And then they initiated the insurgency against the British forces in Palestine with the Irgun and the Sturm Gang killing British soldiers. They blew up the King David Hotel in 1946. They were hanging British soldiers, assassinating people, politicians from the West. So they had to engage in this immense process of bribery, of terrorism, of just constant planning and plotting. They engaged in a massive insurgency to remove the Arab population. I think it was like 500 Palestinian villages were completely depopulated by these Jewish gangs that were roving around. They drove them out, they killed them, massacred them, and they established their state through conquest, right? The Jews established Israel through brute force conquest, through bribery, blackmail. They were sending mail bombs to the British politicians in England to get what they wanted. Now, I don't think so. Like the Jews, it's so fucking ironic because, like, the Jews, in order to get their state, in order to sustain their state, they engage in the most ruthless criminal tactics, murder, assassination, terrorism. Like, they're willing to kill thousands of Palestinians to sustain their ethnostate, to expand their ethnostate, because the Netanyahu Likud faction are obviously pushing for an expansion of Israel, right? They want more settlements. They want to occupy the Golan Heights. They want to grab more land from all these other countries surrounding them. So this is, Jewish imperialism, but like they're able to do this and they're able to get away with this because they have Jewish privilege, because they're blackmailing and bribing all the governments of the world to support them doing this, right? To have them bow. Like they can do anything and the US president will just bow to them at AIPAC. Really comes down to money, really comes down to their power through the control of the money supply, through finance. This is how they dominate the world. This is how they get what they want. Now, whites, especially white nationalists, we have no chance in that respect. We don't have any major donors, right? Show me a bunch of rich billionaire white people that support white nationalism. There's just zero. They don't exist. These rich people, all they fucking care about is maintaining their generational wealth and holding on to it. And going against the Jewish system is probably the last thing that they want to do, because they're just greedy materialists. They don't give a fuck. They don't give a shit about their own race. All they care about is their money and their wealth. So we don't have a white Rothschild. We don't have a white Schiff and a Warburg to help us get this state. So we have to look to other means of getting it, right? You have to start very small. You have to start very small. And so, like, yeah, like, it's a lot of these people in the white nationalist movement, like, especially on the internet, is like, they're not really presenting any solutions to anything. They're just saying, they're just kind of going on with the critique of the anti-white, bias and the all the nonsense that goes on, brown privilege, just going on about the latest Muslim atrocity in Europe. But they don't really say anything about how to circumvent this Jewish system. They're just like, oh, well, if you just vote for the party that's closest to us, like the center right or a populist party, you'll just vote for them, and that's the solution, right? Some of them will say that or advocate for that. Others really don't even talk about solutions. They just say, like, Jared Taylor will just say, like, oh, well, I just believe in freedom of association, and white people will naturally go with their own people, and that's the solution. It's like, well, how does that stop white demographic replacement, right? Like, white women are still not having enough children to overcome replacement level. There's still the mass immigration. I mean, like, white people have been conditioned not to associate with their own people. The leftist culture warriors have totally taken over the universities and the media to push integration and race mixing and multiculturalism. So I think, like, a big portion of white people, like, aren't inclined to just go with their own people anymore. Race mixing has been glorified. Look at all these commercials. It's just filled with, like, it's always a black man and a white woman in all these commercials. The Jewish press is pushing for racial interbreeding. It's everywhere. It's all through the entertainment. So I don't think just telling white people, like, we should have freedom of association and we'll all just get together and form an ethno state. I think that's wishful thinking. I think he's just kind of a tired old man that doesn't really know what, he cannot chart a path because he has no energy. He's just like a 65-year-old man who just kind of gives the same talk every time and says, this is the latest biased anti-white media. White people are being replaced. Thank you very much. Send the donations here, right? Like, where does that lead us? Where does that take us? Where will that take us? It just leads to a dead end, right? It's just a kind of an echo chamber, a very demoralizing way where, we don't have any kind of way out of this. We're back to where we started. We all know what's happening. We all know the system is anti-white. We all know that Jews are in control. But we don't know how to get out of it, So kind of a lot of this stuff on the internet is just it's just entertainment, infotainment. It's kind of, a lot of these guys are making a living off of this stuff through donations, so they just want to keep up with the latest video, the latest interview. And that's all there is to this. It's just, e-celebrity, stupid bullshit, right? So that's one of the critiques that are made of these, like, these tired old boomers that, have led the white nationalist scene. Kevin MacDonald, you have David Duke, you have Jared Taylor, and these guys. And these guys are just, the wind has been knocked out of their sails. Like, they just repeat the same shit over and over again. They offer no solutions. They just act outraged about the latest anti-white atrocity. Talk about how the Jews are behind all of it. Yeah, we know all of those things, right? It's like, it's fine to, like, point out these things and the anti-white stuff going on, but, like, eventually we're going to have to come up with something more practical that's like, that goes beyond just complaining about it. It's like, right now we're complaining about it, and we need to complain about it in order and point it out to people in order to recruit more white people to our side, obviously. So I'm not saying that none, there's no value to any of that. There's value to it. However, like if this is all that we do and we do nothing else, then it's kind of fruitless. It's kind of a waste of time. It's kind of like, what do we get out of this, you know? Where does the road end, and what do we find at the end of this road? So there has to be something more practical. There has to be more real activism and a real vision and something that can be accomplished, or else we're just dreaming in fantasy land, right? We're dreaming, and which is basically what all Richard Spencer does at this point. I mean, that guy is just completely off the rails. Like, all he cares about is doing some gay ass fucking live stream with some degenerates, you know, philosophizing about, you know, stupid shit that nobody cares about, right? So yes, we continue the propaganda war, and that's important, of course, but like at some point we have to work towards something more practical, and I believe that is like forming these ethno villages, like going to some secluded town and like buying up all the property there and inviting other people, like-minded people, to go there and set up a town, you know? I think that's a good idea. I think that is really the best idea. For people of our stature, we're just middle-class people. We don't have the power to affect massive change on a global scale, you know? So we have to do what's in our means, and that is one thing that we could do easily, right? You know. So anyway, that's what's going on here. The website's alt-right.com. Please subscribe to the website. I guess the last story I'll talk about here. So as I mentioned, the Jews had a particular advantage in establishing their ethnostate because of the wealth and the dedication of their leaders, right? Wealth and dedication that we simply do not have. We don't have white wealthy men that are committed to white nationalism. So, you know, we have to look at other routes. And I don't think white people will have to like engage in some massive, war to achieve an ethnostate like the Jews did, because they basically had to remove another people in order to set themselves up in Palestine. Whereas there's plenty of space within white countries already to set up our own state. There's plenty of land, there's plenty of space that exists that people are not even living on, where we can establish something. So I don't think we even need as we don't really need the kind of resources that the Jews have to set something up. We do need resources, but like I don't think it has to be like Rothschild level. But the last story I'll comment on here was George Soros said he's going to put $1 billion to start a global university to fight authoritarian governments and nationalists. Yes, of course, he wants to fight nationalism. That is his life's purpose, his life's mission as a globalist Jew who wants to establish a Eurasian Negroid mixed race of plebeian slaves and consumers. That's the goal of George Soros, is to turn everybody into a little fucking drone bot who just purchases iPhones and Samsung big screens and McDonald's fast food, and the Jews can rule the world from Palestine, right? You know, this guy is an utter fucking lunatic demon. One look at this guy, and you just look into his eyes, and you see this guy is possessed by the devil. He is a satanic demon sent here to terrorize the white race. And I mentioned in the article here that George Soros, there's disinfo out there pushed by liars like Alex Jones, a Zionist propaganda shill who always, you know, incessantly invokes this trope that George Soros was a Nazi because he helped the Nazis identify Jews like years and years ago in Hungary or something like that, and they rounded up the Jews to put them in camps, that he did that to save his own skin. I mean, to use that argument to say that he's a secret Nazi and is ideologically Nazi, it's just totally ridiculous. It's totally fanciful. It makes no sense. I mean, the guy is committed to total globalism and open borders and liberalism and homosexual anal sex, and you're going to say that he's ideologically aligned to Nazism? You're fucking out of your mind if you're saying that. And of course, Alex Jones is out of his mind. He's drunk on Jewish propaganda. He sodomizes himself every fucking night with a Jewish dreidel and pumps out this risible, laughable disinfo. Soros is the opposite of a Nazi when it comes to social policy, but he is a Jewish supremacist, and everything that he does is designed to help the Jewish race overcome the Gentiles or help weaken the Gentiles so the Jewish race can be supreme. And he says, his son Alex Soros said in an interview with the New York Times, I'll give you the quote. "When the caffeine finally kicked in, Alex told me that for many years his father had not been eager to advertise his Judaism because, quote, this was something he was almost killed for, but he always had always, quote, identified firstly as a Jew, and his philanthropy was ultimately an expression of his Jewish identity, in that he felt a solidarity with other minority groups, and also because he recognized that as a Jew, he could only truly be safe in a world in which all minorities were protected." Explaining his father's motives, he said, "The reason you fight for an open society is because that's the only society that you can live in as a Jew, unless you become a nationalist and only fight for your own rights in your own state." So this clearly, indisputably illustrates that George Soros is motivated to do what he does to promote immigration, to promote homosexual anal sex and gay marriage and everything that's destructive to white society, because he is a Jew. Because he's a Jew, his Jewish identity drives him to do these things. His Jewish religion drives him to do these things. He hates the white people because white people have quarreled and had conflicts with his Jewish race, and he doesn't forgive that. He has a revenge fantasy. He is carrying out a generational grudge against the white race, against Christianity, against Europe, against Edom, against the Amalek, the Goyim, the Gentiles. This is his goal, is to crush the Gentiles, is to eliminate any obstacle to Jewish racial global domination centered in Jerusalem, as David Ben-Gurion predicted. This is the goal of George Soros, is to establish a Jewish world government where the Jews will declare total global domination and the defeat of the Gentiles, and they will own slaves and all this. All of this is in the Talmud, it's in the Torah. They believe this. Soros is pursuing this. He has an inscrutable, visceral hatred of the white racial group, and that is why he does what he does, because he's a Jew. Anyone who says anything different is lying to you, is spreading disinformation specifically designed to protect this Jewish motive, to hide it from you so that you don't become anti-Semitic, right, you stupid goyim? Alex Jones is a filthy, obese, degenerate piece of crap who has been spreading risible misdirection and kook shit for 10, 20 years. He's been misdirecting on this issue because he works for these damn Jews. And he even said that he did. He's like, the white supremacists kept attacking me and calling me a Jewish agent. So I just decided I love Israel and I just became what they said. He admitted that, like, because he was criticized for being a shill and blocking discussions of these topics, he decided to become a Jewish shill. And that's how fucking pathetic this guy is, right? He admitted that. So there it is, folks. That's what we're up against. We're up against, you know, very vicious people. They want us dead. They hate us. And, you know, we have to kind of network together and try to find some solutions to this. Nonviolent, of course. Nonviolence. We don't promote violence here, right? We're not promoting or endorsing any violence. It's the Jews that are committing violence against their enemies in the Middle East, against us. They're enabling violent Dindus to attack us, right? Importing them here and sicking them on us. You see the videos coming out in Europe of gangs, mobs of Negroids and Pakistanis and Moroccans just beating up white kids in the schools and bullying them. White people need to stand up. You need to hit the fucking gym. If you are a white male in your teenage years, in your early in your late teens and early 20s, hit the fucking gym. Start pumping those weights. Pump iron. Build some muscle. Get fit. Get in shape. Learn how to fight. Learn some techniques, some self-defense techniques, and hit these motherfuckers back. When they attack you, when these mobs of Dindus come and try to attack you, you will be ready, you will be fit, you will be strong, and you can defend yourself against these rabid animals who only attack in packs. You notice they only come in packs. They're only strong when they have a gang because they are weak. These fucking losers don't work out. They don't go to the gym. They're sitting on the couch smoking weed all day, right? They're just more aggressive. They're just more violent, right? They kind of know how to throw a punch, but it's like, it's usually a sucker punch. They usually do some kind of, you know, shit where you're not looking. They come up behind you or beside you from the side, and they sucker punch you because this is how they do it, right? A bunch of cowards. Cowards. Time for white men to stand up. Stand up for yourself. Get strong mentally, physically. You know, you have to adopt a very haughty attitude, a very confrontational, adversarial persona to really be effective in this, because, you know, our enemies are ruthless. They are vicious. They're unrelenting in their attacks, and the only way to really defend against it is to harden up and really fight fire with fire. So that's the last I'll say for today. The website is alt-right.com. Please subscribe to the website. Share the links far and wide. I'm going to try to get Bitcoin to receive donations for those people who appreciate what I'm doing and my articles. Stay strong, stay safe, take care.